listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Hello, everyone. It is good to be back in studio and in the hot seat today. My co-host Chris Mueller is out of town, but I'm so happy to have Don Johnson with me.
Hey, Timmery.
Hey, Don. How you doing?
I'm good. I like what you've done with the place. I like the music.
Like all the
cameras. Voiceover. Very professional. Mr. Jim has done a fantastic job. So, looking good.
Yeah, we've got a full team here growing and growing with Trending, and you are in town for the Humani Vitae Conference this week in Ontario.
Yes.
So you've got
big week.
Big week for you. You have been working up to this for, gosh, like a year and a half now.
Like a lifetime.
A lifetime. Truly.
That's what it feels like. I got to stop doing these projects. They take forever. But yes, when it finally is done and you get to go and show it to everyone, it feels good. So
for those who don't know what we're talking about, Don, since right around when we first started Trending about a little over a year and a half ago now, we started working together at the same time after having converted to Catholicism just a couple years prior, I think a year prior to that officially.
Yeah, 2015. So
you just converted to Catholicism. You had debuted your movie Convinced, talking about the conversion story of yourself and many other prominent people in the Catholic world. And then he decided to take on the toughest topic having to do with Catholicism. Like, there couldn't be something more difficult in our culture today, and that is contraception. Your journey, to discovering the church's teaching on contraception was one as well.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It is such a big topic. It's probably the most countercultural topic within Catholicism, but it was making Convinced that sort of started me on that journey, right? So I had went and talked to all these converts, a convert myself at the same time. What were some of the major reasons people become Catholic, but also don't become Catholic? Like,
right.
What repels people from the church? Well, it's the sexual ethics, right? It's those issues. It's contraception. It's the same-sex stuff, right? It all kind of goes together. But contraception especially strikes a lot of people as just insane, right? Like, what? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it's possible to be anti-contraception, right?
And I didn't know there was another lifestyle,
yeah,
essentially.
Right, exactly. And so when people realize that the Catholic Church teaches against it, on one hand, it repels them. They're like, well, mm-hmm. I can't be insane, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when they dig into it, when they learn what the church actually teaches, it becomes this huge attraction. And it was a huge attraction for many of the converts. And ultimately for me, I mean, I don't think it was one of the major issues for me, but when I realized what the church teaches and how integral it is to just like all of our cultural issues right now, that was really a compelling story for me.
And I look at this and you have such an opportunity to share what the Catholic lifestyle is, this idea of life-giving, self-giving love, this idea that's overcoming the passions and desires and putting them in right order. This is what the whole Catholic lifestyle is about. And suddenly Catholicism is really being put to the test in the modern era, starting in the 60s, as contraception is widespread adopted, essentially. And it's amazing to see how we have a lot to do in defending the church's stance, the Catholic lifestyle surrounding human sexuality and contraception. And that's what the show is about today. We are going to be unpacking, diving into, for those who don't know, Humani Vitae turned 50 actually this week on the Feast of St. James, the 25th of July. And so the Humani Vitae Conference is getting into, well, what have we learned 50 years after Humani Vitae? What are the challenges? How have we seen the church further articulate what it means to be married and have intimate, caring, fruitful love between husband and wife? And so Don's documentary, we haven't mentioned it, is Unprotected. And it gets into the nitty gritty of what the church's teaching is.
Yeah, so Unprotected, it does talk about I want to talk about the title a little bit. So on one
please
hand,
do.
On one hand, right, if you look at the cover, if you go to unprotectedmovie.com and the first image you'll see is of a youngish girl, teenage, young adult girl, mm-hmm. Very sad, obviously in pain, suffering. And the title is a throw to her. Like, she's been mm-hmm. unprotected. We have left young women, but not just young women, but especially, I think, young women,
right.
largely unprotected in society. But it's also, of course, a little bit of play on the whole unprotected sex and protected sex, and that
Absolutely.
Whole thing gets into that. So
very provocative. I like it.
Yeah. Hopefully people will think a little bit. We'll get them to think.
You know, and this is an interesting. So I've had the opportunity to watch the movie and interviews along the way, and you have been somewhat controversial even in prepping the movie and the challenges of how far do we go in having a conversation. And those who are followers of Trending know that we kind of take the hands from behind our backs and have a deeper conversation that is maybe in some words a little more risque than you usually hear on Catholic radio or in Catholic dialogue. But it's necessary. And that's what you're doing with Unprotected.
I think you got to talk about these things. In fact, one of the major detriments, obviously, that we've had in the culture is a refusal to address some of the issues that are underlying all of the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, well, we can't talk about what's going on behind closed doors, or we can't talk about some of these sexual issues because people get offended. Well, those are the problems. Like, those are the issues that are causing all of these other things. And so you try to deal with all the symptoms without ever getting to the root cause. That's not mm-hmm. going to help anybody. So, yeah, we do. You're right. It is a little bit tough, frankly, Timory, making a documentary that's church folks are going to watch, but at the same time talks about some very deep, personal, hard issues. Mm-hmm. Putting them on film. I know we've had frankly, it's been a bit of a struggle sometimes.
Right.
Like, I want you to see these things, but at the same time, we can't show all of these things. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and two, even Catholics are going to have a hard time swallowing this. You know, give or take whether or not you believe fully in these stats, some of them are coming out of the Guttmacher Institute, which is Planned Parenthood's, you know, right-hand researching group. Back in 2012, they said somewhere in between, it was the high 80s or it might have even been 90s. There were two studies. One showed in the 80s that people thought contraception was morally okay, and another 90% of Catholics in both states, 80% Catholics, 90%, that they were using contraception. And so those numbers are both very high. They came out of two different groups. One was, again, that Guttmacher Institute. So Catholics, it's going to rub some people the wrong way because this is a change in lifestyle. And I want to talk about that. So those just joining us, that's Don Johnson, my former co-host in town for the Humanae Vitae conference. And we're going to be talking throughout the show about our common arguments against Humanae Vitae. We'll also be talking about the great impact Humanae Vitae has had on helping to bring about further fruitful relationships. And then the last segment of the show, we're going to be talking about courage, because I think we all need a little bit of courage in living this lifestyle and speaking it out loud. But I want to start by just my story personally. Humanae Vitae has been fundamental for me, both in my own faith journey and in living out the virtue of chastity. And here's why. I was about 12 years old, and on my mom's shelf was a little encyclical Humanae Vitae. And I had been exposed to a lot of incredible pro-life and Catholic speakers because my mom worked for the Diocese of San Bernardino in the pro-life office. So I enjoyed going to these different conferences and learning at a very young age. And when I was 12, I picked up Humanae Vitae and read it. And I'm sure a lot of concepts didn't fully come to fruition.
I just want to throw out, you're probably the only 12-year-old girl in the history of the world that has picked up this encyclical and read it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's probably safe. Okay.
And sorry. I even had to pull back. I'm like, well, which house were we living in at the time? Wow. Oh my gosh. I thought maybe I was like 14 or so. No, I was about 12 years old. It was the first time I picked it up. And these ideas of how every sexual act, because we know most kids today know what sex is much earlier than 12 and fortunately, the exposure is so high. I mean, the most common age for both boys and girls to be exposed to porn is 8. So we know. And so I think having an understanding of Humanae Vitae right then, I begin reading it. And right away, I clasp on to this idea that every sexual act is supposed to be unitive for the good of the spouses, right? And procreative. And that breaks down throughout the teaching of Humanae Vitae, to be totally given to one another, right? This freedom that we see in human love, this act of being faithful to each other, the permanence and fidelity there in the relationship, that it's meant to be fruitful. All of these ideas were so fundamental that you saw this purity in the way a relationship could take place. And that's what my mind was able to grasp at the time. I picked it up again. I remember a couple moves later, it was on the shelf after we had moved. And again, I was able to understand in a deeper way. And over the years, Humana Vitae has been fundamental in understanding the importance of chastity and human respect and the responsibility of parents, and that the proper context for marital love is within marriage.
The whole idea of what love is and the proper context of it and how you kill love through contraception, that was what was really compelling to me too. But right. Just the idea that if I want to love someone fully, I must be able to give of myself completely. That was like the concept for me. Like, oh, you mean I'm not loving by not by contracepting? Oh. You know, that was key.
Even with the idea of a barrier, right? The barrier of a condom and how that's not a total full bodily union taking place. And even for some of our younger listeners, you might want to lower the volume for a second, maybe catch us on podcast. You can go to radiotrending.com. But what a lot of the teaching shows that even for the man, the level of orgasm and chemical interaction between the two cannot take place fully when that condom, that barrier is there. And so the chemical bonding takes place on a very different level between male and female at different points during sexual intercourse. And that's preventing some of the bonding that needs to take place.
It's a very hard physical image of the reality that's taking place on many, many levels, putting a barrier between two people.
Absolutely. We're going to come back and talking more about Humana Vitae, the excellent teaching, and how you can kind of respond to some of these common arguments that are very easy to approach. That's Don Johnson. I'm Timory Millington.
Chris and Timory will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Contraception, it's one of those topics that separates us both within the Catholic Church and a lot of times from our Protestant brothers and sisters, having to do with sexual morality and immorality. We were just talking a little bit back on the show about the barrier methods, condoms, and how that takes away from the unitive and total self-giving element of human sexuality. With me in studio, filling in for Chris Mueller, is my former co-host, Don Johnson. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Timory. Always good to be here.
So we talked a little bit about the barrier and the impact, even on a chemical level, right? Talking about our biochemical makeup, not just philosophy and theology here, but how we're with that barrier, we're preventing that full chemical bonding from taking place between the male and female with that barrier.
Right. And it's also, I think, in essence, an altering of the people. So not only am I unwilling to give of myself completely to my spouse, but I'm not willing to accept who she is for me, right? And I think this is something that in talking to folks that I hadn't really really caught before, is that what in essence you are saying is I'm unwilling to accept you as you are.
Right.
I want you to alter yourself in some way, whether it's putting on equipment or changing your hormone, like literally changing your hormones, becoming someone other than you are. Christopher West in the movie talks about, would it be right for me to want my spouse to get breast implants before I was willing to have sex with her or get a nose job or any of these things? Is it really any different to say, no, I'm only willing to become intimate with you if you change your body in some way? So there's so many of those kind of...
Our bodies, as women, are being told that we're deficient and in need of fixing. This is what was so problematic with the HHS mandate about 7 years ago now, saying that we're going to mandate contraception as basic health care, yet you can't even get basic asthma medication sometimes to breathe for free, but you can get contraception for free. So it's saying it's more important that you have pleasurable sex than it is for women to breathe correctly, essentially.
Can we talk a little bit about the healthcare thing? What a misnomer that is, right? Like what are you doing with contraception? You're literally altering the person's body, taking someone who is not sick, right? A healthy person, and transforming their body to make it unhealthy, to call that healthcare is crazy.
No, and people are going to push back automatically. Well, I'm just on it for my skin. I'm on it to regulate my cycle. I'm on it. There are a number of reasons. Sometimes they're trying to balance out their hormones. The issue is that if you're trying to balance out your hormones, you're giving yourself a universal dosage rather than focusing on, oh, you're low in progesterone, you're high in estrogen, and properly balancing with the right dose. Same thing with acne. What happens is it becomes a fail-safe, but it also changes the way men and women interact on a pheromonal level as well. And for those who don't know, pheromones are the way that we interact on a level of smell to attractive individuals. We even see this in the animals, right? So a hog, if they are in the kind of a fertile period of time, if the female hog smells the pheromones on the male hog's breath or through the saliva, the female hog will rotate and present its rear end to the male hog saying, hey, I like you. Let's get together. Let's start a family. Well, guess what? Same thing with the human person. On a pheromonal level, we interact, and women who are not on contraception seek someone who has a different biochemical makeup from her so that they can create a healthy offspring. But if you're on contraception, you're looking for someone who's familiar to you, like your family members, because you want to be safe and protected when your body is in a state of pseudo-pregnancy, false pregnancy. So you're looking for a protector rather than someone to make a healthy baby or have maybe a healthier lifestyle as well, which we can smell on a pheromonal level as well.
That's all. You start looking into some of the physical effects of the pill. Yeah. And I mean, like, actually dig into it. Don't just take, you know, what you've heard at class at school or whatever, but actually dig into it. Part of making this movie, I sort of felt like Erin Brockovich. You remember Erin Brockovich? She was the whistleblower with the California Power, where they were poisoning water, you know, in the Central Valley, right?
Yes.
And it's a typical story about big corporations pumping poison into the water or whatever it is. They're poisoning innocent people, but they cover it up because there's so much money to be made. Mm-hmm. There is a lot to this story, very similar, right?
The pharmaceutical.
Well, yeah, and not just the big pharmaceutical companies.
But tell us more, because you've been, in the trenches of this.
Well, you look at the big pharmaceutical companies. I mean, again, this was the first opportunity for them to sell something to healthy people, right? In general, in the past, people had to get sick to want your product. Now we're going to sell it to healthy people, everybody, right? Add on to that, though, big media, right? Like the pornographic magazines, and it wasn't just the pornographic magazines, but all media really has a big stake in you continuing to have promiscuous sex and all that other stuff. And so big media, big porn, big pharmaceutical, all of these things, they have a big monetary stake in you continuing to be on the pill. It's interesting that a lot of those side effects then of the pill get covered up by those same companies.
So what you're saying is, their business is your sexually promiscuous lifestyle.
Absolutely.
That's what it is what I'm hearing here. And so they thrive on that. They need to work together in some way to promote this lifestyle, which is interesting because if you read Humana Vitae, if you haven't read it, and even someone on the Facebook page, the Facebook comments, because we're on Facebook and Instagram Live right now, one of the people said, it's very short, read it. You could read it in an hour, maybe two if you take a little bit longer. Humana Vitae is profound. And one of the pieces it talks about is how we, all of us, the lady, the faithful, the Christians, with one united voice, it says, needs to speak up against the different forms of media that are promoting this lifestyle, promoting a lifestyle, even to the point where, you know, opposing literature or movies that are arousing to our own bodies, how we have to speak up and hold the line. And man, you know, I think that we justify so easily the things we're watching, but it says the church is calling us to stand up with a loud, united voice and say, no.
And too often, unfortunately, I think you're right, Timory, we just accept the sexual objectification of women as sort of, well, that's just how it is. In fact, it was called liberating at the time, you know, mm-hmm. Let's walk around in states of undress and be objectified. In fact, Helen Gurley Brown was proud of the fact that she was treated like a sex object and said that we should, as women, be treated like sex objects. And now, you know, with the Me Too stuff and the culture, I mean, as a father of three girls, two of which are now now teenagers. This was an added impetus for me to make this movie. Like, I do not appreciate the message that my girls get presented like 24 hours a day, you know, 60 seconds a minute. It's like wherever they look, they're seeing women objectified. And now it's interesting to me because I feel like there's in the culture, there's a bit of a desperation. Like, well, we don't really know what to do. We have sort of two minds. Like, on one hand, yeah, it is kind of wrong, isn't it, that all these women are getting objectified? But at the same time, you look at the media that we've been producing now for 40, 50 years, and it explicitly has promoted the objectification of women. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, partly, in large part, because that's what the contraceptive mindset does. You separate sex from procreation. What does the woman become but an object of sexual pleasure?
An object of sexual pleasure and just a cog in a machine for the sake of progress, right? She's supposed to be in the working field. She cannot be interrupted by a pregnancy because that would become problematic for her employee in the process of what is taking place in her company. And I mean, you just hit the nail on the head talking about when you separate sex from babies, but let's go a little further. When you take babies out of sex, then you take sex outside of marriage, every protection for that human life, their natural born right to a mother and a father, has been destroyed. And so now what do you have? Contraception. Well, oh, here's what's happened. We are expecting a baby and we didn't plan for it. We had been contracepting. Well, what's the fail safe? 1973, not much longer after contraception was allowed in our country, you suddenly have abortion, the fail safe, through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy.
Oh, they're intimately linked. You can't have one without the other. The only reason we have abortion in this country is because we first accepted contraception. Mm-hmm. The very same people, Betty Friedan, for example, who wrote The Feminine Mystique in 1963, talking about how women should be in the workforce, how they shouldn't be at home, and that if you're going to be happy and fulfilled, you can't be dragged down by husband and babies. You got to be out there. And like you just said, you just explained it very clearly. In order for that to happen, we have to have contraception. But what happens when contraception fails? We have to have some other way to get rid of that baby. And that's why she was the guiding force behind NARAL, the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Laws. That's why they had to happen, because we already accepted contraception. If we had said no to contraception, we wouldn't have the abortion. It's very simple.
Well, and with contraception, we began to ding away at the idea of the dignity of the human person. We started to devalue ourselves. We started to devalue marriage. And so then suddenly we are closer to being able to devalue a person to the point of being able to kill them, right?
Well, it starts with the kids, right? Yeah. If the kid is a roadblock to you finding happiness and success through money and through promiscuous sex, which is what the message was to women, you can't, what does the child become then? If at the very beginning they were a roadblock, right? An obstacle. They're just a thing to be gotten rid of. I mean, it's a very... And what happens when they, you know, like within that culture, what even happens to the kids that get born? They understand that they're in general treated as a roadblock to success. The effect on children has been absolutely devastating.
Well, and here's an example. I actually shot this over to you before the show. Helpers of God's Precious Infants is a sidewalk counseling group. And we have one at our local abortion clinic in San Diego. And they just shared the story of a success, a save outside of the abortion clinic where a couple came out. Basically, the couple shows up early to the abortion clinic and their counselor is already there. Thank God they were there before it opened. And they start talking to them. They know they're there for an abortion. And they end up spotting that the dad...
He's carrying a baby, right? Like, it's an amazing story. So beautiful. It brings tears to your eyes. The couple was there. They already had a kid, very young. They didn't want another one right now. They thought this too pressure. But just having that counselor there to pray, just ask a few questions, you know, like, really? You know what the value of that baby is. A fantastic story.
Yeah. And then thanks to the intercession of the counselors, they kind of come in and out. And in the end, they come out weeping and smiling. They leave saying, we chose life. They are in the car. The wife's very emotional, but they get in the car and they're smiling in their tears of joy and gratitude that he spoke up and she said yes, and they're having their new baby.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Hey everybody, I'm waiting for more voiceover, but it's not coming, is it? Hey, this is Dawn Johnson. That's Timmery. This is Trending. Chris is on assignment this week.
He's on assignment.
Speaking to some group somewhere, I'm sure.
He's been at Catholic Familyland in Ohio. He's been traveling to all the different Steubenvilles. He's been busy this summer, to say the least.
But we are here to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. 50 years ago this week, Pope Paul VI, a prophetic document, a prophetic and short document that is worthy of celebrating. Probably the most countercultural church document of all time. Probably the most widely dismissed, even by Catholics. Ignored and dismissed by Catholics of all time. But yet he's been proven to be right. I mean, the document was accurate. He sort of made, you know, four major prophecies that, you know, governments would start to intervene in your fertility. We would start to objectify women. There'd be a lowering of morality, all of these things. They've all come to pass, and they can all be directly related to contraception. So it's a good time, 50 years later, to look back and say, you know what, we need to take another look at this and continue our work.
And maybe you're here listening and you are a priest, and I'm just going to speak specifically to you right now, whether you're a priest or you're a deacon. I have heard so many breakdowns and confusion surrounding contraception coming out of, unfortunately, sometimes the clergy. But I also know a lot of incredible priests who have towed the line saying, if you want a healthy and wholesome relationship, if you want to find joy, the harder path, but the lifestyle is a Catholic lifestyle that is chaste, that is not contracepting. And I want to thank every priest who has spoken up, and those who are fearful, those who are uncomfortable. You know, we just had Father Tim Grumbach on the show last week, and he was talking about how he does marriage prep with young couples and how there is fear that comes about, but how he stands up in the face of fear and stands with courage and confronts the issue with love. And when you do that, even if people choose a different lifestyle, they respect you most of the time.
Well, and here's the thing, you've got truth on your side, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like we're making stuff up. This is about providing the truth to people who desperately need it. You're asking them to conform their lives to reality as opposed to live within all the toxicity that the world offers. It's really just like being a doctor saying, if you want to live healthy, you're going to have to stop ingesting all of the poisons that you're ingesting. That's all I'm saying. Like, stop taking that stuff in and live according to reality, and you will be much happier and healthier. And so that's the message. Unfortunately, the culture does offer a lot of lies in this regard. And we've got an article here, Timory.
Absolutely.
That talks about them.
There's an article that came out of The Guardian that I saw, because it's not only the Catholics talking about Humanae Vitae, but what's the news media saying? The church came out with this document, Humanae Vitae, 50 years ago. It's old news. Catholics don't even follow it. So you're probably seeing a lot of pieces very similar to this. So here are some of the common arguments that, because essentially there are advances in technology, that we should embrace them. This is one of the first ones. But this is false, right?
It's so obviously false. I mean, almost when a new technology comes along, I'm not quite a Luddite, but you should almost always be very hesitant in accepting it, right? You look back at new technologies, they're always like widely accepted. Oh, great. You know, we've got cigarettes. Oh, isn't it awesome? This will be fun. You know, we've got all of these things that 50 years later, you look back and you think, what were we doing? Now, just as a little quite a small side note, Timory,
yes,
I fully expect in 50 years, we'll look back at the cell phone thing we were doing these days and we'll say, oh my, what are we doing? I mean, we were crazy.
We were addicted
and it destroyed us. And hopefully we come around the same way as cigarettes, right? You look back at all the 50s shows, everybody's smoking like chimneys. And we look back and say, oh, well, that was crazy. Same thing here with contraception. Just because you've got a new technology that does something that you find pleasurable does not mean, of course, that it is good.
Right. And contraception is a form of new technology, new research. And praise God that there are people willing to research and discover such incredible things. But just like in vitro fertilization, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Same thing with contraception. Just because you can doesn't mean it will lead to a lifestyle of happiness. Let's read just on this note here, just very briefly. Humanae Vitae speaks of the church and how the church, quote, encourages man not to abdicate human duties by over-reliance on technology. And you read this from Humanae Vitae, Don, and it's fundamental. It makes sense.
Yeah, you become a little bit less human, right? Like, what does it take to be fully human? It requires that you exercise your self-control, mm-hmm. that you develop virtue, right? That you don't want to be like an animal or like a machine that's just running based on like an input-output thing. Oh, I get this input, I do this. You know, you're running on instinct like an animal.
Right.
No, we're humans. We get to live much higher than that.
Absolutely. So another one of the common objections is, it's a bunch of celibate men who held the line on contraception. It wasn't like it was women making this decision within the church, but it was celibate men holding the line, this strict, rigorous view on hormonal contraception.
Yeah, several lines of thought we could go with this. One, it wasn't just men, okay, that women, particularly feminists, historically have been very anti-contraception because they knew that it would be very bad for women. So like even in America, right, the early feminist movement was very anti-contraception, as were, frankly, most of the early leaders and almost everybody in history up until 1930. I mean, you know, presidents, right? Like from Sigmund Freud to Roosevelt to the early feminists, they were all saying, listen, contraception is going to be a bad thing. So it wasn't just a bunch of celibate men.
Absolutely. It wasn't a bunch of celibate men. In fact, the church came together having a major conference where it wasn't just celibate men discussing this, but married couples, women talking about the experience. And what we saw is a lot of people did want to push for married couples to be able to use contraception, but they didn't know the harms. For example, we haven't even touched, and you guys, there's so much that we could dive into. Both John and I have, like, this is our life work sitting here. But I mean, it's a group one carcinogen, hormonal contraception. I mean, we could talk about these. At the time, the bishops didn't know that, but they saw the interpersonal harms taking place if we were to accept and oppose the natural order of how the human bodily functions are meant to work. And so, you know, it wasn't a bunch of celibate men. And I mean, even Sigmund Freud talked about the adoption of contraception.
Right. And let's talk about the celibate men. Let's just assume it was. I mean, okay, it wasn't. But even if it was, all right, is it so wrong for celibate men who happen to be priests to offer a moral opinion on something? Of course not. In fact, and this is something Jason Evert talks a lot about in the movie, if you have a priest who spends his life listening to people of all kinds, right, of all varieties, from in the confessional to just living day-to-day life, they have a much broader understanding of the travails that people go through than you or I do. I don't spend my time, honestly, frankly, I'm just not a nice guy and I wouldn't do it anyway, but you know, I'm not hearing from everyone and I'm trying to get to their innermost thoughts and their struggles. A priest does that, right?
Yes.
And so for a priest to offer an opinion on that, not only is it okay, I'd actually like look to them first a lot of times, saying, what is the truth? Like, what are people actually dealing with?
There should be a sense of moral objectivity taking place from the priest. I mean, think about it. You just mentioned it. I mean, they're spiritual directors. They are head of catechists. They're head of schools. They're head of parishes. They do marriage prep. They do marital counseling. They hear confessions. And in fact, on the next episode of Trending, if you're listening on the Spirit Catholic Radio Network, you won't get this episode. So be sure to check out radiotrending.com or your podcast. We're going to be talking about how a priest actually warned, as a priest who hears your children's confessions, take Snapchat off their phone. I don't care how angry they are. You have to. We're going to talk about that on the next show. So be sure to listen to the podcast. But, you know, you coming back to this, this moral objectivity is fundamental. And it wasn't just Catholic priests saying that we cannot adopt this. The world has seen through the ongoing teaching of basic philosophy and the understanding of the body that when we turn our backs on procreation, when we try to manipulate how the bodies naturally work, we have group one carcinogens that are harmful. We're changing how we relate on a pheromonal level so that people are no longer as attracted to each other, or people get married on contraception and then they get off contraception. And oh my gosh, I'm not attracted to you the way I thought I was attracted to you. Marriages are breaking down. This is what happens when you turn away from natural law.
It fundamentally alters the relationship. And of course, we're unit of beings, right? So not just the physical, but the physical goes into the psychological and the emotional. And it has fundamentally changed the way that women and men relate to each other. And so, you know, we've talked about this often in the past on the show about, you know, women having a hard time finding good men and good men thinking like, well, what does she want from me and all of this stuff? But there is a fundamental difference when we start with the assumption that sex is a non-procreative activity, right? Like if we start with that and that sex is for pleasure and you're someone I can get pleasure from, that's a starting point. Well, that's fundamentally different than we have ever started in the history of civilization. So, for example, 50, let's say 100 years ago, if I said to a young lady, hey, I would like to have sex with you, she could interpret this to mean, wow, you want to have children with me and build a life together.
You want to get married.
You want to get married. I mean, okay, right. What does it mean today? And here I'm stealing this from Christopher West.
That was a winning bell there 100 years ago.
100 years ago, that was a good thing. Now what does it mean? Hey, you're hot and I want to have an orgasm from you. Mm. That's essentially what we're saying now. What is more upholding of the dignity of women? You got to understand, this is the starting point, right? Like young men, they grow up looking at girls as either hotties or not hotties. I mean, right? It's a starting point. That's all made possible by contraception. Without the pill, we don't have that as a starting point. I understand adultery, we've had sexual objectification. I get that. But not on the culture-wide level that we have today.
You know, and I look at it in a lot of like the studies of Humana Vitae, it's basic. The idea of a marital continence, so the refraining from sexual intercourse when you're fertile and for a serious reason you cannot have a child at that time, you can refrain from sex during that period of time where you're fertile. And we'll talk a little bit more coming back to that. But why is it that we treat sex like food, that, you know, you should be able to just live off of your desire and have it when you feel that you need to? No, sex is so much higher above food and basic animal-like desire. And it's a good thing to have temperance, to have periods of continence, because then it perfects how we love and interact. We'll be right back on Trending. That is Dawn Johnson. I am Timory Millington. Go check us out on social media. You can find me at Timory, and you can find Dawn Johnson at
DawnJohnsonMinistries.org.
Absolutely. We'll be right back on Trending.
Chris and Timory will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Welcome back. Dawn Johnson here with Timory, sitting in for Chris. He'll be back, I don't know, someday, if I let him come back. Before the break, Timory, we were talking about the relationship between food and sex a little bit. And you said sex is on a higher level. Absolutely, it certainly is. But there is an analogy that sometimes people use within this topic that I think can be helpful. There is a relationship between food and sex, and that it's one of those sort of things we need is essential, we think, right? Like, this is part of what it means to be human. I need food to survive. I need sex to survive, this sort of thing. And in a sense, absolutely, that's correct. But what if we treated food the way we treat sex these days? And I've read several different things on this, you know, like C.S. Lewis used to talk about, wouldn't it be a bit weird if I, you know, had a picture of an apple or a banana and I had the, you know, the glossy and I just stared at that all day? I mean, I enjoy food as much as the next person, but to make it sort of this crazy object of obsession seems a little much, he thought. And I agree with that. And actually, frankly, the food thing, the foodie thing, as much as I enjoy healthy, good food, don't get me wrong. And by the way, the place I'm living now, Eugene, Oregon, fantastic foodie town.
So
fantastic
jealous.
Foodie town. So many great places. Anyway, side note. But to take food to that level is a bit much, right? If you just spent your whole day thinking about and looking at nothing but food, yeah,
some people do on Instagram anymore.
And I would say maybe that's a little imbalanced, right?
Quote unquote food porn, not making a joke of
right.
it.
Right, not to denigrate the actual bad, I mean, porn, but yeah, that's why they call it food porn, right? It's like, what does pornography do? It takes something that is natural to a wrong level. And the other thing, what if we took food and just gorged ourselves on it and then went and threw up all that food and then started gorging ourselves again? People do this, and we rightly look at it as a problem, right? Like, you've got an issue there.
That's a fantastic analogy. Play
right?
that
like
out more.
You've got, what is the term for that? I'm trying to think of the actual.
Eating disorder.
Yeah, like an eating disorder where you gorge and then throw up and then gorge again and then throw up. What are you doing there but using food in a way that's not natural to the way you're made? Like, you're doing, food is natural. Using it in that way, not natural, not healthy, not going to be good for anybody. Yet that's what we do with sex, right? We try to engage in it, but the contraceptive mindset is essentially the same as vomiting it out, right? Like, oh, I don't want all of it. I don't want what it's actually for. I don't want the natural way to use sex. I'm going to vomit it out immediately in the same sense. So that's one analogy people use.
Absolutely. And there are fantastic consequences that we can point to in both instances, whether it's the eating disorder or whether it's the use of contraception. And the use of contraception doesn't come down to just a marital challenges, but challenges with the children, challenges with your health, challenges on so many levels. I mean, there's so much that we could unpack here. I want to take just a couple more arguments here. So this piece from The Guardian, because you're going to hear a lot of smear pieces that 50 years ago, this church document came out rejecting contraception. Well, Catholics don't live by it. They use it all the time. So one of the arguments is that it was rejected by women and that it would lead women to a perpetual life of fertility, of childbearing. It's just not true. Women, and I mean, my own life is a testament of this. I have an undergraduate degree, I have a graduate degree, and I'm working in my profession of choice. I didn't need contraception or abortion.
What? How did that possibly happen, Timory? Did you possibly make choices? Did you possibly understand the way your body works like women have?
I'm just naive.
Forever, right? Like, yeah, we're all, oh, I didn't realize that prior to 1960 when the pill came online that all women everywhere had 27 kids and didn't realize how they were getting pregnant, and they didn't know how to regulate. Oh, really? Is that what was happening? No, of course this is ridiculous. Of course women understand how they get pregnant, and they have had natural ways. They're actually, I mean, they're much more scientifically accurate now, but women have always understood how to avoid pregnancy and how to become pregnant.
Absolutely. And for those who are maybe curious, you know, what are some opportunities for learning? You know, look at what fertility care awareness methods are. You know, the fact that there are multiple ways, it's not just saying, hey, you guys are stuck with the rhythm method. No, there are a lot of inconsistencies in women's cycles today, whether it's from food, stress, health, you name it. So the rhythm method isn't really as reliable for most people. And that's also not what the church is talking about when they say NFP.
In fact, there was an explicit appeal from the Pope at the time to say, you know what, we got to do better than the rhythm method. And we haven't taught we've never taught the rhythm method. I mean, no. So
never.
That's another smear. You're going to hear, oh yeah, well, you know, what do you call a woman who's on the rhythm using the rhythm method? Pregnant, right? It's an old smear. So after I finished the documentary, I've been doing this other little video on NFP practices, which I wasn't really actually frankly familiar with.
Right.
And so, yes, I went out and actually interviewed at the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, Dr. Billings. Anyway, the other doctor, I'm sorry, there's two major. But the scientific precision at which natural family planning is occurring these days and practiced is phenomenal.
Well, and that it's higher and more successful, if used correctly, than hormonal contraception.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and just to throw this out there, because we're not going to get into it, but looking at, you can monitor your basal temperature to know with the peaks and the falls of your temperature to know precisely when you are fertile. You can monitor, sorry guys, but cervical mucus to know when to observe, to know when you're fertile. And then you have these days, right, that you can narrow down, because the woman's only fertile for a small number of hours in a particular day. And it's more so that the sperm has a longer lifespan. And so, you know, refrain from sexual intimacy, from all sexual intimacy, the church teaches, during that time, out of respect for your partner, out of respect for the reason, legitimate, serious reason, as the church teaches, for avoiding pregnancy. And what happens is it allows for a deeper respect of the psychological and physical, basically temperament at the time of the woman, and for other ways of loving each other, and it purifies our love rather than being on the level of desire.
Yeah, and let me throw out one just other added thing here. The natural family planning movement, in particular the Creighton model with Dr. Hilders, I finally remembered his name, at the Pope Paul VI Institute, are on the cutting edge not just of having women avoid pregnancy, because actually that's not the major issue these days. Mm-hmm. It's trying to become pregnant. And I've talked to women, Timory, in the last few months who have, after years and years of going to doctors all over the country, all over the world, who've just said, you know what, we can't do anything. They go to Catholics who are doing this because they love natural family planning, and they are becoming pregnant. It's absolutely cutting edge technology. The science is amazing. Go check it out. Dr. Hilders at the Pope Paul VI Institute.
And out of that, you can check out naprotechnology.com. So you're looking for a napro technician. And so they also look at, and this is the part I didn't mention, are the hormone levels.
Right.
And what's the imbalance in the hormones? Maybe they're low in progesterone, which if you don't have enough progesterone, you can't stay pregnant necessarily. You might have a miscarriage. So naprotechnology.com. And I'm throwing this out there. It's not just for fertility reasons, but your hormones matter, ladies. And maybe you're a man who knows someone who's really struggling with just overall health issues. Your hormones and understanding your hormones can be a huge indicator of good health versus bad health. And so getting in touch with a NAPRO technician, even before your childbearing years or after, is really important for having good female health.
Yeah, no, this is huge. That's the first thing they do there. I heard this again and again from women who have done. The first thing to do is get me healthy. We're not going to worry about the babies till later. You need to get healthy, and it's life transforming. Yeah, check it out.
Absolutely. So one of the things I want to kind of end on here, really looking at the importance of courage, because I was listening to a piece and I was talking about, well, what is courage? Courage is being willing to say something or do something in the face of fear. And I think that there's a lot of fear that enters into conversations with family, friends, or maybe even spouses, right, about contraception. And, you know, the reality is you guys, you can approach us from a philosophical standpoint, from the standpoint of friendship and respect and how, you know, contraception pulls away from that. You can approach it from the perspective of it's a group one carcinogen, estrogen and progesterone in their synthetic forms in the pill. And I could slam you with resources on this. You have a lot of ways. It's just being willing to get past that fear. Because even for me, fear is present when talking to family and friends about it.
It's so tough in a culture that it's so widely rejected, right? Mm-hmm. Like when people hear that you're against contraception, it's like you're like against water. You know, or air. It's like, what is wrong with you? That's where the courage is required, that you have to realize, no, this is the truth. Yeah. If it's the truth, you're standing on firm ground, okay? Mm-hmm. I think that's a starting point for any steps you want to take. Just if this is true, and these people are living contrary to the truth, it's like they're ingesting poisons or living contrary to reality, yes, we have to somehow gin up the courage to address them with the truth and sort of let the chips fall where they may. It's not up to you to convert everybody, I think, but you do have to have the courage to at least provide the resources that they are need. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a selfish plug here, even if it's just like pointing them towards the new movie, mm-hmm. right? Which, and this is why I made it, you know, it's intended as something you could give to those 90% of people who reject it or have them check it out in a non-threatening way, just to help them see, you know what? Maybe everybody on the other side isn't completely crazy.
Don Johnson is here. He is a maker of Unprotected. It's looking at the impact of the sexual revolution, but more specifically, hormonal contraception and how we need to wake up as a society to help others understand, both from a health perspective and from a religious, philosophical worldview perspective, that a life of contraception is not a happy lifestyle.
Yeah, it's so fundamental to so many of the cultural toxic things that are happening.
So it is airing, actually, its debut at the Humana Vitae Conference in Ontario on July 27th for anyone who can get over there, and that's Ontario and Southern California. Right. How can people find it otherwise?
Yeah, go to Unprotected Movie, right? Unprotectedmovie.com. We'll be doing screenings for a while. And then later on in the year, we'll do the DVD, the digital download, all that stuff. Right now, though, we are scheduling screenings at your local parish and theater. Unprotectedmovie.com is the place to find out more.
So I'm asking you to coordinate a screening at your parish, at your local theater, at your youth group, whatever it might be. Don, where can people get in contact with you? It's been great having you on the
Thanks.
Show.
Thanks. Yeah. DonJohnsonMinistries.org. Very simple contact.
How about social media?
At Don Johnson Media on Instagram and Twitter.
Thanks for being with us, and catch Don on another episode this week of Trending.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.